Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Heart of the Matter. This is Pastor Ralph Ovidal. It's good to be with you today. Recently, I read a new translation of the first five books of the Bible. The man behind this translation is a professor at the University of California at Berkeley, Robert Alter. Now, Professor Alter claims his new translation is needed, badly needed, because the King James Bible is fraught with, as he says, quote, embarrassing inaccuracies, unquote. And, of course, the thing about this translation, this new translation, from what I understand from this article, is that this man is not coming up with one more easy-to-read, dumbed-down Bible. You know how that is. They just crank them off the assembly line. It's just one translation, one perversion after another. This is so people can read it easier, and sooner or later it's just going to be pictures, you know, instead of expecting people to learn how to read and actually educate themselves a little bit. They're just pandering to people's laziness and unwillingness to truly seek after God. And that's, of course, terribly wrong for many reasons. But this particular translation is claimed to be actually going up, not down. In other words, it's going to be more accurate. And today we're going to hear what Pastor Don Waite thinks about Robert Alter's claims in his translation. I'm turning to Pastor Don Waite because I have a great deal of respect for him. And before we hear from Pastor Waite, I think it would be good for me to share his bio, given the subject at hand. And I have it right here on the back of Pastor Waite's book, Defending the King James Bible. Let me just read this. The author of this book, Pastor D.A. Waite, received a Bachelor of Arts in Classical Greek and Latin from the University of Michigan in 1948. He received a Master of Theology with high honors in New Testament Greek Literature and Exegesis from Dallas Theological Seminary in 1952, a Master of Arts in Speech from Southern Methodist University in 1953, a Doctor of Theology with honors in Bible Exposition from Dallas Theological Seminary in 1955, a Ph.D. in Speech from Purdue University in 1961. He holds both New Jersey and Pennsylvania teacher certificates in Greek and language arts. He has been a teacher in the areas of Greek, Hebrew, Bible, speech, and English for over 35 years in 9 schools, including 1 junior high, 1 senior high, 3 Bible institutes, 2 colleges, 2 universities, and 1 seminary. He served his country as a Navy chaplain for 5 years on active duty, pastored 2 churches, was chairman and director of the Radio and Audio Film Commission of the American Council of Christian Churches since 1971, and of course we've had Ralph Kolas from that group on this radio program. This is, believe me, it's not the National Council of Churches, quite the opposite. You can rest assured of that. Since 1971, has been founder, president, and director of the Bible for Today. Since 1978, has been president of the Dean Bergen Society, has produced over 700 other studies, books, cassettes, and VCRs on various topics, and is heard on both a 5-minute daily and 35-minute weekly radio program in defense of traditional Bible text, presently on 25 stations, and he is also the pastor of Bible for Today Baptist Church. And so that's his background. So you see, this is a man that's well qualified to speak to this issue. Dr. Donald Waite, thanks for joining us today.
Good to be here with you, Pastor Ovidal.
Well, you're a King James Bible defender. And on behalf, quite frankly, of a number of us people who also are King James Bible defenders, but who get a little nervous about what that means because there's a lot of confusion. And there are certain people who say, well, we're defending the King James Bible, but they're holding to some positions that we would, quite frankly, run from. Let's make sure people know what it means. In your case, and quite frankly, I think I'm in agreement with you in my case and a lot of other people's case, let's make sure that people listening know what a King James Bible defender means in that regard.
Well, certainly a defender of the King James Bible says that it's the only accurate translation of the English language today. And defending the King James Bible, we defend it for 4 reasons, as I've mentioned in my book, Defending the King James Bible. The first reason, a very important reason, it has superior texts of Hebrew and Greek. The words that underlie the King James Bible are unlike the words that underlie these modern versions of perversions, like the NIV and the New American Standard and so on. The Hebrew Masoretic text, the words are the words we believe that have been preserved from the time that Moses and Isaiah and all the other writers wrote them right down to the present, and those very words are the things that underlie the King James Bible from which the King James Bible has been translated. The same is true in the Greek. We believe that those words underlying the King James Bible are the very words that Paul and Peter and John and James wrote, been preserved right to this day and the new versions of perversions do not have those same set of Greek words underlying them. In fact, they have a total of 2,886 Greek words shorter, cut right out of the New Testament, because it's a Westcott-Hort type of Greek text, or call it the Nestle-Aland text, or call it the United Bible Society text, the critical text, call it what you will. The Greek words are different from these new versions, and so we must defend the King James Bible. They have the proper Hebrew words, proper Greek words, and these words that are in these new versions, because they've dropped out 2,886 of these Greek words, there are a total of 356 doctrinal passages where these new versions are in theological error because they have the wrong words. They've dropped them out, they've changed them, added to them in order to accommodate the Gnostic heresy of Alexandria, Egypt. Mm-hmm. And because of this, actually, the difference is not. Some people of our fundamentalist variety many times say that there's very little difference between the text of the critical New Testament and the text of Receptus that underlies our King James Bible. This is absolute fallacy and falsehood. Dr. Jack Mormon, one of our missionaries our church supports over in London, England, has written over 500 large pages where he outlines exactly over 8,000 differences between the critical text of Nestle-Aland and the text of Receptus that underlies the King James Bible. 8,000 differences. I realize some are minor, but many of them are major, and we must face that. And even our fundamentalist friends who say that, well, there's very little difference. 8,000 is not very little difference. That's tremendous difference as far as that's concerned. And then they say that theology is not involved a lot of times, these fundamentalist friends. We have many of them that say, no theology, no difference. Theology is involved, 356 places at least. So back to your question, Brother Odell, pardon that long extension, but we believe the King James Bible is to be defended because of its superior Hebrew and Greek words that underlie it. Secondly, it should be defended because of superior translators. Now, you've talked about this other gentleman that has this early, the first five books of the Bible translated, this professor and so on, Robert Alter is his name. He claims to be better and better and better than any of our King James translators that gave us our Old Testament Hebrew translation from the Hebrew. I don't believe it in the world. I believe our men are superior. They're superior to him. They're superior to the translators that gave us the New International Version, the New American Standard, the Revised Standard, New Revised Standard, and all the modern versions. And that's the second superiority, the superiority of our translators. The third superiority, the superior translation technique, whereby they go words, the verbal equivalents, and then the form equivalents. The words, our translators of the King James Bible believed that Hebrew and Greek words should be brought over into the English language accurately. They did this. They didn't add to the words that the Hebrew and Greek had. They didn't subtract. They didn't change. And that's the problem with these new versions. They have added, subtracted, and changed. They call that dynamic equivalence. And this is wrong. The fourth superiority of our King James translators and the Bible is why we defend it, superior theology, superior texts, translators, technique of translation, and now theology. Doctrine is important. As I said before, over 356 doctrines are different and wrong from the new versions because they have the wrong Greek text. So basically, this is why we defend the King James Bible. It's got some uncommon words, and that's why we've produced in our Bible for Today ministry what we call the Defined King James Bible, where my son, D.A. Waite Jr., has labored hundreds of hours on that. The footnotes accurately give the meaning of uncommon words, so that nobody needs any other translation. Just use the English King James Bible instead of all these other English versions and perversions, and you can understand every single word that's in there, and it's accurate, and it's done in a wonderful way. That's why we use it, and not only use it, but defend it.
And that is a beautiful Bible, that Defined Bible. I mean, in the sense that it's well done with the footnotes. It's actually, of course, the King James Bible, but it just has these definitions where they're needed.
You've seen it, have you, Pastor?
I've seen it, so it's in our church, and really did appreciate it. And I just want to say this.
Pardon that long extension.
No problem. I know you mentioned fundamentalists are even, I mean, I would consider myself a fundamentalist, and they're even buying into this. These new Bible perversions, these Bibles that are not based on the right text, they have poor translation, they have the technique is wrong, and of course, as you say, in the end, it's theology that suffers. But I want to encourage people to take a second here and encourage people to get the book Defending the King James Bible, because that's what you deal with, the text, the translators, the technique, and the theology. And I can't think of what issue could be much more important than this. And so many people treat the Bible so lightly. They go to the bookstore and they go through, well, maybe I'll just try this or I'll try that. You know, you think they were picking out anything but a Bible, which is God's Word that we believe is verbally inspired, not just the thoughts, but the very words themselves, and also preserved the same way by God. And so I would encourage people defending the King James Bible. How can they get this book?
Just simply call us at 1-800-JOHN-109, J-O-H-N-109, 1-800-JOHN-109. It's easy to remember since it's a Bible verse. And simply ask for the defined King James Bible. We'll tell them how to get it. They have a Visa or MasterCard, some credit card. They can do it over the phone, or they can write a check to our ministry, Bible for Today, 900 Park Avenue, Collingswood, New Jersey. Either way, phone or writing, either one, we'd be glad to give it to them. By the way, that book, Defending the King James Bible, that you advertised, just talked about, Brother Overa, I had an email just yesterday from one of the theological seminaries, Faith Baptist Theological Seminary in Ankeny, Iowa. One of the teachers there, Dr. Myron Houghton, wrote me and said, some people said that's out of print. Is it still in print? I said, yes, it is. He said, we use this as required reading in our advanced bibliology class here at Faith Seminary. My son, Dan Waite, graduated from that school. So I'm glad that it's still being used. I told him, yes, it's in print. In fact, it's in the ninth printing, 350 pages, hardback edition, and still sells for only $12. So how can you get a 350-page hardback book these days for $12? It's very difficult.
Well, the thing's packed from cover to cover, so I just encourage people, get the book, because this issue is near and dear to my heart. It is so important, and if you don't get this right, I mean the problems that spin off of this, to say the least, using the word problem in a very light fashion, I guess it's worse
right.
than that, are just
now
unbelievable.
You mentioned some of the fundamentalists that see things differently from us. You know, I don't know whether you're interested in detail, but the fundamentalist four, I always say the main fundamental schools that are teaching against our Textus Receptus, the texts that underlie King James Bible, and the preservation of those Hebrew and Greek words, starting with Bob Jones University, and now three of my children went to that. I know it's got a lot of fundamental truth, but in this area of the Bible, it's gone haywire. They do not even believe that God promised to preserve his Hebrew and Greek words. Didn't even promise. Every verse that we see that he has promised, they say, oh, it doesn't mean that. And therefore, if he hasn't promised to preserve his Hebrew and Greek, then he hasn't produced it. And so they find all kinds of mistakes in the Hebrew, mistakes in the Greek. And following Bob Jones University, a fundamentalist school, is Detroit Baptist Seminary, and then following them is Central Seminary, and then following them, Calvary Baptist Seminary there in Lansdale, Pennsylvania. So these are the main. There are others, like Maranatha Baptist Bible College is following in the train, Northland Baptist College, but other fundamental schools, and many pastors that go out of these schools, go into the mission field even, and they teach this and preach this, and it's a sad thing among fundamentalists that they are denying that God has even promised to preserve his Hebrew and Greek words on which our King James Bible is based.
It is it's a tragic situation with some tragic results. Let's jump into this Robert Alter translation. We have about 16 minutes here. I wish we had 60. Because I'd like to talk to maybe another time. I want to eventually talk more about the whole Hebrew text and the Aramaic text as well, underlying the Old Testament. But maybe we should just jump right to his translation. Maybe some of that will be worked into it. But tell us about this translation. Have you had the opportunity to examine any of it? And what do you think of it?
No, because it's a huge undertaking. It's probably very costly. And your daughter, Janet, just told me just a few days ago, and I haven't had a chance to get it. But from the description, the article that you sent me from the new translation of the Bible goes back to Hebrew roots. That's what it's called. And I did see that also on the Internet. That was a part of the thing. Under the Yahoo Internet situation. I could just, from the description of it here, I can see many things of which I would be displeased in regard to. First of all, the length of it. Here's the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, and this man has written 1,063 pages. I realize that includes his footnotes, which I understand are extensive, but here is the defined King James Bible. With our footnotes and all, our footnotes are extensive too, we have only 316 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you divide 316 into 1,063, you get 3.3 times longer than the King James Bible. Now, the question is, what in earth is this man trying to do? You see, there's some definitions of what a translation is. For example, Dr. Francis Steele, he says a legitimate translation should convey as much of the original text in as few words as possible, and yet preserve the original atmosphere and emphasis. The translator should strive for the nearest approximation in words, concepts, and cadence. He should scrupulously avoid adding words or ideas not demanded by the text. And, of course, three times the length of the regular first five books translation indicates to me that the man has gone way overboard. One of the things that he's mentioned that he does, he says he restores every single "and" in the Hebrew text. Well, the Hebrew language is a very pastoral language, and so he gives an example here about the coming to Rebekah and meeting Rebekah, Abraham's servant, and she came to the spring and filled her jug and came back, and, you know. Well, in English translation, we don't need those "ands" in descriptor phrases that Hebrew uses. And so it's not contrary to English translation to omit these "ands." And yet he has every one of the "ands" everywhere it is. No wonder it's 1,000 pages instead of 300 pages in length. That's just one comment and picture there.
Well, when you say omit the "ands," go a little further on that, because if you believe in verbal inspiration and the words are preserved, and then you just need to explain more now, but now you say to omit certain words. So explain a little bit what you mean by that in the translation.
The Hebrew word, which is a wow, mm-hmm. just a wuh, it's just wuh, which is "and," it's just what it is. It's just a Hebrew way of combining thoughts. Mm-hmm. Instead of putting a period or a semicolon, they combine it and add it and add it. We call them run-on "ands," you know. Mm-hmm. And we're told in English we're not to use run-ons.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't say, "I went downtown and I went over to the bank and I went over here and I did this and then I went there," and then, you know, that's a run-on sentence. English translation does not use that technique. Now, that doesn't minimize the word "and." That's a connective, but it's an untranslatable type of a connective, mm-hmm. with that little this little wow or this little Hebrew letter, and it's not does not need to be translated. We're not denying the inerrancy of the scriptures or the fact that that word is there. It's just simply one of those things that when translated into the English language or Spanish or French or German or any other language, it's not necessary to add.
See? So it becomes, in other words, it becomes a period.
That's right. Exactly.
Okay.
A period or a semicolon or a comma or whatever. And we don't need that as far. Now, it doesn't diminish that at all.
Okay. Now, I know he uses, from his version, he says, "God's breath was hovering over the waters," he says,
uh-huh.
instead of the Spirit of God hovering over the waters. What's wrong with that? He says the Spirit of God, he says he'd rather say God's breath.
Well, he's pneuma is Greek for spirit, and nephesh is
mm-hmm.
Is the soul, and the breath is something else. But this is also spirit. See, in the Old Testament, the idea of, let me just get the Hebrew there, and we can see exactly what that is. The Spirit of God is the Hebrew word. Let me just get this just a minute here.
So when he's going, and I'm going to give you time to get that, but when he's going breath and spirit, it's obviously just a mistranslation when you say breath, because that's not what it translates to. It clearly translates to spirit, because it's two different things.
Right. See, ruach is the Hebrew word for breath, but
mm-hmm.
also spirit, wind. In fact, that word ruach occurs 378 times in the King James Bible, and ruach is spirit, or 232 of those times. In other words, that's now wind 92 times, breath 27 times,
mm-hmm.
and so on. It has other meanings. Sometimes anger, sometimes cool or outrage. In other words, a man is spirited, you know, but it's basically spirit. And if this man is so against our King James Bible for translating the Spirit of God, why in the world doesn't he also fault the other versions and perversions of our day?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that. For instance, New American Standard Version says the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters, just like King James. The Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. Even the NIV, the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. New King James, Spirit hovering. All these things. Even the New Revised Standard Version, the they say the wind from God. Now, they do backwater in that thing, but the old Revised Standard Version, before they got it dressed up, the Spirit of God was moving over the face of the waters.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are American Standard 1901, the Spirit of God. This is standard translation, and this fellow is out of the of his mind, as far as I'm concerned, trying to push this thing and make it wind.
Yeah, but,
absolutely ridiculous.
When it comes to translation, I mean, you do need to be highly educated in these languages, obviously, because here you have the same word which can be translated two ways, and you really have to study the text, don't you? And,
yes.
And when you really study the text, Spirit of God, as opposed to what he says, God's breath,
yes,
hovering over the water, that doesn't even make sense.
This is the person of the Godhead. And since this man comes from the school he comes from, I'm sure he's an apostate unbeliever bound for hell. And he doesn't have the Spirit of God in him. He can't understand what's translation and what isn't translation. He's trying to improve on something that cannot be improved upon, as far as I'm concerned, as far as English translation.
Well, we talked a little bit about Hebrew and the translation of Hebrew into English. Now, talk a little bit about Hebrew in general as a language. I mean, would you consider that a very, very hard language, so to speak, to translate, to understand, or where does that rank?
No, I think it's a very simple language.
Very simple.
It's a pastoral language. The Hebrews were people that had moved with cattle and animals and so on, and the description of things is very poetic, very simple, kind. It's a little bit more difficult for some to understand than to study than the Greek, but I've studied the Hebrew, and it is a very easily understood language. That's why, he doesn't even like the, in the beginning God created heaven and the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Bereshith is at the head or at the beginning. Bara, created. Elohim, God. Shemayim, the heavens. Waharetz. Now, it's a simple thing. In the beginning, God created. And here he switches the whole thing up, talking about when he began to create. There's no beginning in there. If this is so awful, why did the New American Standard say the same thing? In the beginning, God created. Why not the NIV? In the beginning, God created. See, why does he zero in on the ugliness of our King James Bible? I don't understand. Even the New Century Version, which is a modern version, in the beginning, God created. See? And he's got some idea of when he began to create. There's no beginning in here. He's picking and picking and picking, and I believe that he's in error in regard to it.
Now, the Hebrew text being a simple type of language, that's where you might have a word, like we were talking about with breath, that might have several different meanings. And that's where you need the skill to understand the Hebrew language and understand the culture, everything you can understand before you jump in and start translating, and you shouldn't impress your own ideas and prejudices into it, as he has done.
Yes, and of course the context determines what phase of that meaning mm-hmm. of the Hebrew should be put into that particular place in Scripture. And I believe he's misplaced it. And University of California at Berkeley is where he is a professor, and some of the people in Berkeley call it Berserkly.
Yeah.
And certainly there's so much berserkness going on in Berkeley. I don't know where this fellow's coming from, but I don't believe he's a scholar that should hang his head high. I think he should hang his head low. Some of this trash that he's called accurate translation in his Hebrew thing. Now, I have not looked at it, but just from these different quotes from Genesis 1:1 and this without form and void, he picks at that, says that's a horrible, horrible thing. What's wrong with without form and void? As I say again, the New American Standard, formless and void. New International, formless and empty. New Century even, it was the darkness covered and so on, empty and had no form. Where does it come up?
He so you're saying
to
that
want to be different.
Even that escapes the higher critics. I mean, they even leave that sort of thing. But well, he comes up with welter and waste.
What does that mean?
Well, when you stop and think about it, it's a very, very bad translation, because the earth was not welter and waste. How could it be waste? God was creating it, and at this point in creation it was without form and void, but it wasn't waste. And
right.
So he's just very, very loose. But again, the reason we're talking about this is to just remind people to be very, very careful and not say, oh, here's something new, here's something more accurate, as if... Dr. Waite, the whole thing that drives this whole school of higher criticism is that there's constantly being new scholarship revealed, new findings, new archaeological findings, and somehow the Bible wasn't complete, and now it's finally going to be complete, and that is just so abhorrent.
And there's no end to these new translations, new. But as far as this man's ability, just take Dr. Lancelot Andrews, one of our Bible translators. The man at his sermon, someone mentioned he was conversant with 15 languages. Now, why does he think that these men that gave us our King James Bible are stupid, and this guy coming out of Berkeley is going to improve upon the thing, and he's castigating these men who were scholars? Dr. William Bedwell, another one, translating the Old Testament Genesis through 2 Kings. He published, he was a student of Arabic as well as the Hebrew, which is a sister language.
Mm-hmm.
He engaged in compiling an Arabic lexicon. He had a Persian dictionary, which again is a sister language or a cognate language. And he's, I don't know whether this fellow even has heard of Persian, except a Persian rug or maybe a Persian cat. But so he knows a little Hebrew. I mean, I don't know, but the point of it is, he's trying to, it's one thing if he wants to, why does he have so many footnotes? If his language translation is so simple and so easy and so wonderful, why does he need all the footnotes to explain them? That's what the mentions in the article. He's got just hundreds of footnotes and long. Maybe that's why he's got the 1,000 pages where we have 300,
mm-hmm.
three times longer. And it seems like to me, it seems if he's so clear, why does he need the footnotes to make it clearer? They can't understand what he's got in his translation. And so he has to clarify it with footnotes, apparently.
Well, it's being lauded. I mean, this translation is being lauded as something wonderful and a new breakthrough, and, you know, this is going to give us so much better understanding of God. And, of course, this is just, as far as I'm concerned, a lie from the pit of hell, to use sort of a worldly expression, because God delivered us his word complete when he delivered it. And as you say, Hebrew is a simple language. Greek is something that can be translated quite easily by people who know what they're doing. And God verbally inspired and preserved this word for us. And this constant drumbeat of, well, you know, we've uncovered something new. We understand something better. Dr. Waite, to think that for millenniums we would not have the whole Bible, and it took these, you know, modern brains to now give us the word of God, is just absurd, that God
yes.
would leave his people in partial darkness, for
yes,
instance.
Yes, it is. And I'm kind of waiting to see when he finishes the whole Old Testament. He's only got the first five books, but they're, 39 Old Testament books, 27 New Testament. If he's got 1,000 for five books, what's he going to have by the time he's finished? He's going to have volume after volume if he continues. I don't know. Maybe he's going to stop. Maybe this is swan song. Maybe he got so exhausted in writing the thing that he's going to stop.
Well, I can see where what he might be going for is to sort of be the have the definitive translation for teaching in the universities and in the theological seminaries and so on and so forth. I think he wants to be the man, you know.
Maybe.
And that could be very dangerous. Very quickly, in a minute here, about a minute, minute and a half. About a minute. You head up or are part of an organization that defends the King James Bible, and I think it'd be worthwhile to give out that website. Very quickly.
Okay, we have simply BibleForToday, FORToday.org, BibleForToday.org. We also are the president of the Dean Burgon Society. That's also a good website.
Yeah, that's
DeanBurgon, Dean Burgon Society.org. Both of those are available and plenty of materials. We have over 3,000 materials on our Bible for Today website, BibleForToday.org. 1,000 of them defending the King James Bible and its underlying Hebrew and Greek words. So that may be of help to your listeners.
I think it will, and I'd encourage people to go to that Dean Burgon Society website, very, very important website.
And they can get our audio tapes and video tapes, and
mm-hmm.
We have over 1,000 audio tapes that are available on that site. Mm-hmm. Just not to look under audio tapes, and in fact, our video. We have streaming video as well.
All right, well, we're out of time, but we'll just encourage people to go there and understand what it is to be a King James Bible defender. Some of that has been perverted as well. So let's just be very cautious and prove everything in these days.